Ms. Pastor.
May it please the court. This court should re-examine whether to permit district courts to consider the losing party's indigence when deciding whether to award costs to the prevailing party under Rule 54D. This morning I will explain first why this exception lacks a sufficient legal basis, and second why it is also bad policy. Rule 54D1 establishes a strong presumption that costs are to be awarded to the prevailing party. While the plain language of the rule does leave to the district court some measure of discretion, this court has already held that there are only two reasons to deny costs: misconduct by the prevailing party and the losing party's indigence. With respect, the city submits that only the exception to penalize the prevailing party for its misconduct is supportable. For one, the indigence exception as it stands appears to conflict with the statute setting forth the requirements for informa paupera status. That statute expressly provides that even where a party is granted permission to proceed informa paupera, that party can still be held liable for costs at the end of the litigation. And this approach only makes sense.
This is another case where the Seventh Circuit has misled seven other circuits by initiating this. A lot of other circuits have made the same mistake based on our initial decision. Is that your position, Ms. Pass?
I suppose, Your Honor. The majority of the circuits do appear to have gone that way.
You have a circuit, right? The Sixth Circuit?
Sixth. Yeah, right. Appears to not permit this exception. And the First Circuit has cited that Sixth Circuit case with some approval. The First Circuit, as I read the cases, hasn't firmly come down on one side or the other. But, of course, this circuit's never been shy about taking a minority position when that is well-reasoned.
We took what became a majority position, though, in this case, didn't we?
This circuit was sort of on the forefront of creating this exception about 20 or so years ago. But upon reexamination, there seem to be some fairly compelling reasons.
Why don't you go into those? Why this two decade and a half or whatever mistake that this court has made? We should revisit that.
Well,
apologize maybe to the other circuits that we've influenced, right, Ms. Pastor?
If the court so chooses. Of course, after 20 years of living with this rule, we've seen how it actually plays out. What happens is, for example, this exception gives this one category of litigants a free ride to pursue claims in federal court that no other category of litigant enjoys.
Why does it give them a free ride if, in fact, they can't pay? If you can't get blood from a stone, then awarding these costs against somebody you can't pay doesn't make any difference. Now, I appreciate your proposition that you're worried about false positives. You're worried about district judges saying the plaintiff can't pay when, in fact, the plaintiff can pay. And in that case, it makes a difference. But if you have only the class of cases where the losing litigant, in fact, can't pay, it is no more free if costs are awarded than if they're not awarded. They won't be paid.
That's obviously correct, Your Honor. I have two responses to that. One is to say, at least at the outset of the litigation, that party has to make the same calculus that any other party has to make about whether or not to pursue.
So you're saying you're worried about the option value of costs?
I'm not an economist, Your Honor.
But that's what an economist would say.
You're
worried about the option value.
That's part of the problem is that this category of litigants doesn't make that calculus at the beginning. But of course, what you say, Your Honor, is true. I mean, if a party truly cannot pay, the judgment will be, under the rule we're proposing, the cost judgment will be entered. If they can't pay, the judgment will remain unenforced.
That's what occurred here. We didn't get a district judge making a deep enough inquiry in the facts of this case, right? Maybe we should remand for that kind of inquiry.
That is certainly, the position we've also taken with this case. But I would say
the city's taking this position because it believes that our 23-year rule is gets into the calculus of what pro ses who figure you can get a free ride in district courts in this circuit by file a suit because you're never going to pay the cost. Is that the fear that drives the concern to ask us to revisit this?
There's a couple things, Your Honor. One is that, you know, the people are not making that calculus at the beginning of the litigation. But, of course, there's other and what that and the result of that is not simply cost judgment that aren't entered against the city, but it's the volume of cases against the city are increased. The city, of course, has to settle some number of these cases. It makes an economic decision, just as any other large defendant, to settle some percentage of cases, even where we feel there's no merit. So the cost to the city.
You don't do that based on these minimal costs, do you?
Well, it's all part of one. It's all part of the picture.
I understand, but it's what I would guess the relative percentage that goes of what the settlement figure is of the cost seems to be pretty modest, I would.
Well, as you know, Your Honor, costs can sometimes go into even the tens of thousands. So it's all part
of. I don't
know
how many of those cases the city has suffered a great loss on. And do you believe that cases where their counsel is involved, that this cost issue is you know, where let's say counsel takes on a contingent basis, is this a concern that even counseled cases are figuring this special calculus that may be able to escape costs?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. Because, again, there's some number of cases that the city settles, and then the plaintiff and her attorney is able to recover. If I could quickly
Who
get back.
Who actually would pay the costs in this case, by the way?
I'm sorry?
Who actually would pay the costs in this case if they were awarded? Many contingent fee contracts call on the. In many contingent fee contracts, the lawyer undertakes to pay costs and other expenses of litigation. What does the contract in this case provide?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of that. I don't believe it's in the record.
Don't they have to be filed in the Northern District of Illinois?
If that's so, I didn't know that, Your Honor, and I have not looked in this case.
Mm-hmm.
I see that I'm in my time for rebuttal. I will reserve the remaining time, if I may, and return in a few moments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Pastor. Mr. Robbins?
Good morning. My name is Michael Robbins. I represent Emily Rivera. May it please the Court. With respect to Your Honor's question, there was a time when you had to file a contingent fee contract when you filed your appearance in the district court. There was a local rule. That's been abrogated. That's not required.
Been abrogated. Typically, what does the contract provide?
The contract provides that the attorney.
I didn't ask typically. I asked for this.
Okay. Contract. Well, I haven't read it, but I think it's typical of my contracts, and that is I agree to advance costs as necessary. There's a provision in my agreement which says that the client will reimburse me as they are incurred, but that is universally ignored because most of my clients can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the conclusion of the litigation, I am reimbursed for costs to the extent that I've advanced them. If costs were assessed in this under Rule 54, it's my understanding Ms. Rivera would pay. And if I'm incorrect in that notion, I'm sure some judge will let me know. Your Honor's other question, if I can go to that, about why are we here about going to the Seventh Circuit about having costs assessed against an indigent person if they're not going to be paid in any event?
Well, actually, this question cuts both ways. It is, why did you ask the district court not to award them if your client's unable to pay them in any event?
Because I didn't think it was appropriate for a judgment to be entered against her, because I didn't think that the city should take a judgment against a woman who's raising four children on $1,800 a month and try to levy against her.
That's where I get lost in many of these cases where you didn't hear this argued in the first case. But one of the arguments of the defendants was, please don't impose fines on us because we can't pay them. And I wonder, why does the lawyer come to us and say, don't fine us because we can't pay? If they can't pay, they won't be collected. And there is, however, a category of cases where these judgments are, in fact, collectible. It's not a question of can't, but of would rather not.
Well,
and in the category would rather not, one would think that's exactly where they should be awarded.
Well, I sought to protect her from the imposition of costs because I don't think it's wholly theoretical. She does have an income. Her wages could be garnished.
Yeah.
And I thought it was highly inappropriate in this case. You know, the city.
Well, then let me ask you the generic question.
Right.
Why shouldn't we say, enter the award of costs, as of course in all of these cases, And whether it's collectible, and if so, how much is collectible, is a subject that ought to be worked out under bankruptcy law. We've got this elaborate set of federal rules, became even more elaborate last year with the bankruptcy amendments, about what percentage of the plaintiff's income has to be paid over to creditors and what percentage she can keep. Why should a district court try to override that rather than just leave it to bankruptcy law?
I think it's very bad policy. I think if a person brings a case, albeit an unsuccessful one, but one that has merit and it's not frivolous, and I think in the city's brief they're very, very disingenuous in commingling the concept of frivolous and baseless litigation with unsuccessful litigation. This was not frivolous. And, in fact, there is nowhere in the city's brief any reference to Rule 11, which I find rather curious. What this is about is not frivolous or baseless litigation. It is about litigation that is ultimately unsuccessful, and some of it is a very close call. And I think what this is about is not about the money, but the city wants the unfettered right, the absolute right, without subject to any discretion by the district court, to impose costs in an effort to deter indigent people from filing lawsuits.
Well, Mr. Robbins, what would be so wrong in a case such as this, where a little deeper inquiry is made by the district judge as to some ability to pay? It seems to me I don't see any real inquiry into even some modest sums, and couldn't costs be at least found as a matter of policy appropriate because of the city being prevailing, and that there be some assessment rather than some perhaps generalized equitable feeling that it's unsuccessful but what not frivolous. Isn't that what we have here, a district judge concluding not frivolous, but in the general equities of it all, accepting your position of no cost? I mean, that does seem to rub up against the policy of the prevailing party getting well, costs as a matter of, you know, first instance.
I think that's the framework we have in place now. The city petitions for costs, we respond. If we resist the petition for costs, we have to file an affidavit, which we did here. This is an uncontroverted affidavit. The city didn't ask for a hearing on it. They didn't disagree or dispute any aspect of the affidavit. And the affidavit provides as it does. And so I think from that standpoint, I don't have any problem with that. If there should have been a hearing, or if the city had any real issue about the veracity of the contents of the affidavit, they should have raised it. They didn't. What I'm really concerned with is leaving in place the very narrow discretion the district court has, and where it's appropriate, and where somebody has a sufficient showing of indigency that there is no assessment of costs.
If let's say accepting that your proposal for the moment, do we have can we be comfortable that assessment was made in this case by the district judge?
Well, yeah, I can't suggest to the court there's never a sympathy factor here. But
no, I don't mean to.
Well, I think there's an affidavit. I think Judge Cannelli was entitled to rely on it. My client earns $1,800 a month. She's raising four children. She's under the poverty level.
I'm aware of the numbers. I'm not casting in any pejorative way
whatever
the assessment the district
you know,
has
I think
made.
The assessment is made, but what is the city's point here? What do they want from this woman? I mean, she was victimized by a police officer they simply failed to supervise, who functioned in the role of a police officer, but ultimately they didn't have to contribute. They should not be entitled to costs in this case against a woman with these meager means. Respectfully. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Robin. Ms. Pastor?
Very briefly, Your Honor. Returning to this issue of getting blood from a stone, as Judge Easterbrook said, one of the key points here is this has to do with a person's ability to pay both now and in the future. That's this court's rule, that factor has to be analyzed. And as we pointed out in our brief, cost judgments can be enforced for several years going forward. So again, if a person truly cannot pay, the judgment will not be enforced. There's no debtor's prison in this country. But if you fail to enter the judgment, that guarantees that the defendant is never going to get the costs to which it is entitled, regardless of what's going to happen to that plaintiff in the future.
Well, but to the state of the laws we have in the circuit now, what could there be, if the discretion is appropriately exercised by a district judge, could we reserve in that very rare instance where no, where it just the future just bespeaks no likelihood at all. I'm not saying that's this case. That's why I suggest perhaps a remand to revisit it in this case. But why would you want to take away if we send continue to reinforce that how limited this discretion is? In other words, that presumptively the rule that the costs are always the judgment is entered, as opposed to what happened here. Why would you want to take away those few instances where no costs are awarded? Do we have, by the way, any statistics on how often this? Certainly, with the city practices in the Northern District, no costs are ever entered.
Well, we don't have a statistical analysis. We did cite a few examples.
I know.
In our brief. But, Your Honor, I think the point is the safer course of action would be to eliminate the exception entirely. Because, again, if the judgment truly can't be enforced, it won't be. But by permitting the exception, you're forcing the district court to make these predictive judgments about what's going to happen in the future. You do leave open the possibility of some false positives, some cases where the district courts are not using the proper criteria or whatever it is. And that is what happens. That's the danger of having the status quo as opposed to eliminating the exception and with the knowledge that, you know, you cannot get blood from a stone and that's not going to happen. And, of course, there are protections. That's a matter of state law for people to ensure that a judgment against them is not going to drive them into, you know, very serious or force an undue hardship on them. That's a matter of state law, and Illinois has.
By the way, speaking of state law, how's Chicago's current practice in paying judgments against it? There have been problems in the past. Is Chicago now current in paying all the judgments entered against it?
Your Honor, as I stand here, I don't know the answer to that question. The city of Chicago, I think, is generally viewed as a fairly safe bet, ultimately, and that's one of the reasons we're so frequently sued.
You may realize we had long-lasting litigation in this case, the Evans litigation, which we finally had to take en banc, arising out of Chicago's long-term practice of failing to pay judgments entered in federal court against it.
I am aware of that case, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, we ask that the judgment of the district court on the costs petition be reversed.
Thank you, Ms. Bassett. Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed to the fourth.